Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
This is Michael Medved, and there are lots of tours of Israel that are on offer that will show you the Holy Land, but they often ignore the modern state of Israel and the way that Israelis really live their lives. And then there are other tours that will emphasize the modern state of Israel and Zionist history, but they won't emphasize the Holy Land capacity. We're covering everything from the latest high tech to the most ancient archaeology in our tour to Israel with Discovery Institute. I'm going to be leading that tour personally with George Gilder. Yep, the great George Gilder on technology, and Stephen Meyer on science, myself on the history of Israel and its country and culture. Join us through Discovery Institute at discovery.org/Israel2019. That's discovery.org/Israel2019.
Welcome to ID the Future. I'm your host today, Mike Keyes. And with me, J.P. Moreland, Distinguished Professor of Philosophy at Biola University. We've got today our final conversation about Moreland's new book, Scientism and Secularism, Learning to Respond to a Dangerous Ideology. We ended up in the latter part of the last episode talking about how this connects with intelligent design theory, which, of course, our listeners are very keen to know. Now, I want to start this episode with kind of a humorous catch to get everyone's attention. I found a t-shirt on Amazon that deeply connects you and me, JP. You want to know about this t-shirt?
Oh my gosh, I'd like to have one.
Okay. The t-shirt says at the top, "The Earth is flat." And then there's a few other ridiculous statements. And at the bottom it says, "Stand up against scientism." Now, the premise of the t-shirt is the people that critique scientism are the same sort of idiots who think the Earth is flat. And oh yeah, we know that during the Middle Ages, those Christian intellectuals thought the Earth was flat in general, and now we know better because we have science and scientism. Now, of course, I debunk the historic myth that people in the Middle Ages thought the Earth was flat. Actually,
right,
they didn't think that, and they had good reasons for it, often better reasons than people today. But your part of the t-shirt, JP, is the bottom part, which says stand up against scientism, and they're trying to ridicule the kind of thing that your book does. Now, I've actually thought about buying this for you and having a Biola student post it on your door during finals week. How's that?
Oh, man, I tell you what, I'd probably keel over.
Yeah, because...
I have that t-shirt.
Yeah, because, the premise of the t-shirt is ridiculous, and it reinforces the need for your book. All right, so... By the way, if the t-shirt ends up in your stocking at Christmas, I know that John Bloom's wife will sneak it to your wife for me, okay?
Okay.
Now, you mentioned an episode ago or so that logic as a branch of and mathematics are important for science, and logic is actually, of course, a branch of philosophy. Now, there's another branch of philosophy called ethics. Give us an example of a reliable piece of knowledge in ethics that the philosophy of scientism undermines as if it's worth nothing at all.
So, yes. Well, first, science presupposes certain ethical knowledge, or it can't be practiced. For example, it assumes that the following moral statement is we can know to be true. Namely, one has a duty to report one's test results honestly and fairly in the literature. And science as a social practice could not function without that moral value in place. Of course, if scientism is true, then there is absolutely no basis for accepting that moral value except its pragmatic usefulness. But then we would have to treat whatever science is based on this moral principle to itself be pragmatically useful, but not giving us truer and truer depictions of the real world. So scientism undermines that and a couple of other values, like the epistemic values that you and I were talking about in the previous session. It undermines our ability to know and rely on is because they're not scientifically knowable. One other thing. There are things that we know with greater certainty than some things we know in science. And I'll give you a funny example of this. When I was in the hospital after colon cancer surgery, I was there for 9 days, and so I had several nursing teams come and take care of me. About the seventh or eighth day, there was a new nursing team that came in. And one nurse came in and introduced herself, checked my vitals and so on, and said, "Well, tell me, what do you do for a living, sir?" And I said, "Well, I was a physical chemistry major in college, but after college, I decided to go to graduate school at a seminary and study theology. And then I went to the University of California and USC and did my MA and PhD in philosophy. And so I'm a philosophy professor." Well, she said, "Well, that's really kind of interesting." And her face got a very odd look. And I said, "Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to sort of predict what you're thinking right now. And you tell me whether I'm right or wrong." And she said, "Well, okay." And I said, "You're thinking that when I started off, I was in a field where you could actually really know whether something was right or wrong or true or false because you could test it empirically in the laboratory. And I shifted from that to areas like theology and philosophy where nobody really can know anything. It's just sort of sharing your opinion and other people get a chance to share their opinion." Michael, I'm not lying. She looked at me and said, "My gosh, how did you know that? That's exactly what I was thinking."
Well.
And I said, "Well, did you know that there are things that we know in ethics with greater certainty than we know that there are electrons?" And she said, I don't believe that. I think I can prove that to you." She said, "All right, I want to hear your proof. And I said, "When I'm asked, do I believe in the electron, I have to ask the question, what theory of the electron do you mean? If you study the history of the electron, you will know that at the time J.J. Thomson put forth a particle view of the electron, there was a rival theory called German wave views of the electron. And J.J. Thomson's view said there was something like 1,836 electrons in an atom, and they were all embedded in the atom like raisins and plum pudding." Mm-hmm. Now, that was a good bit of that was abandoned, and later there was a view of the electron that exerted forces on protons by creating a vortex in the ether. And eventually the ether was abandoned, and there was the Bohr model, and then there's a quantum model. And I said, "So over the history of the electron, our understanding of what it means has changed. Nobody believes that the Thomsonian electron exists anymore. And so it would not be irrational to believe in 50 years from now, scientists will come up with a very completely new model of the electron and no longer believe that the current quantum electron exists. That's not unreasonable to think could happen, is it?" She agreed with me based on what I told her.
Right.
I said, "Consider the claim, torturing little babies for the fun of it is wrong. Everybody knows that's wrong, even if they don't know how they know it's wrong. They still know that that's wrong. I cannot imagine any discovery that could come forward in the next 50 years that would show that that assertion is no longer rational to believe. I can imagine shifts in culture where people, in fact, don't believe it, but I can't imagine the discovery of any new evidence that would cause us, on the grounds of rationality, to reject that belief as no longer reasonable. If I'm right about that, then my ethical knowledge that it's wrong to torture babies for the fun of it has a greater epistemic certainty and confidence than my belief that the current model of the electron is going to have staying power."
Right. So what did she say?
She literally, she looked at me and said, I have never heard anybody talk like this before.
Okay, then let's come up with a different t-shirt, JP. How about one that says, no more blind faith in scientism?
Ooh, dude, count me and a bunch of other people in.
You know, there's an organization that you have advocated for called Ratio Christi that has clubs on many secular campuses that discusses these issues, and they have a t-shirt that says no more blind faith and introduces their organization. So we might just maybe add a little bit to that t-shirt. I'm on the board, so maybe I can make that happen, okay?
So,
are there any final things you'd like to say about your wonderful book and why it's important for our listeners and their friends? And maybe, hey, talking about Christmas, it could be a Christmas gift.
Well, Michael, I am honestly not just trying to sell books. I was so moved by what I'm seeing in our culture and in the church about the how scientism is at the bottom of the destruction of the church's confidence and its boldness and witness and its confidence that it can penetrate the culture with its Christian claims, that I knew that scientism was the cause of all this, but that nobody knew the name of it or knew what it was or how to spot it and refute it. So I'm calling on unbelievers and believers to please take a time out to look at the single most important ideology in our time. Dallas Willard made the statement that the idea that the natural sciences are the only way we have of knowing truth about reality, quote, is the single most destructive idea on the stage of life today, end quote. I know that's true, but the average person would not identify scientism in the top 10 most troublesome ideas.
So it's not just wrong, it's evil?
It's evil and it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
People need to know how to recognize it, what it is, why it's destructive, and how to refute it so we can teach this to our kids and the people that are going to leave our churches and go on for further training.
That's a great place to land the airplane, JP. Thanks so much for talking to us about your book, Scientism and Secularism. And maybe I'll run into you on campus at Biola this summer. Hope so.
Tell me when you're here and let's get together. And thank you for letting me be on your show.
All right. Well, this has been ID the Future. I'm Mike Keyes. Thanks for joining us.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.